Whether you drive a car,
need a car,
or just occasionally bum a ride with friends,
you've come to the right place.
Join Jill and Tom as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, this is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I am Tom. She's Jill. We'll get to her in a moment. When you have a moment, check us out at consumerguide.com. That's consumerguide.com. If you are car shopping, do check out our 2025 Best Buy list. This list is super handy if you are looking for a new car or truck. And we will be going through the list on air in a couple of weeks. Jill will be on vacation for that one.
I will not be on vacation, but yeah. I will be traveling.
Yeah, boring episode for you, though.
Yeah.
Because we got to rush through the stuff.
Yeah, and I want to talk about it.
Yeah. Well, we can the following week.
Okay.
We'll make time. If you find anything on the list you want to talk about, we'll do that. All right. So check us out at consumerguide.com. Plus, you can listen to back episodes of the podcast right there on our homepage, though you should subscribe. And then Jill needs a nice review, so make sure you do that, especially on Apple.
Yeah, because, you know.
Apple matters.
Apparently my voice.
Like 75% of our listeners, Apple.
But probably not through Apple CarPlay, according to you.
No, that could be through Apple CarPlay.
But you said nobody uses Apple CarPlay.
That's not what I said. No. My point has been simply that I think the buyers of electric General Motors products are not as attached to Apple as people older than them. I think that, first of all, there's a certain amount of Apple pushback amongst younger consumers.
Okay.
And I think that they're buying EVs, and I think they just don't care as much as you think they might care.
But,
that's my point.
But it's going to take effect in regular gas vehicles soon.
Yep, it will migrate. So. It will migrate through the product line eventually, probably. What we're going to see is as the breaking point here is whether or not another maker does this.
Correct.
If the industry starts to break with Apple, that'll be a big deal. If General Motors backslides on this and decides that we are, in fact, scaring away some consumers, that might go away. So we'll see where that goes. That voice, by the way, Jill Simonello, Managing Editor of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk, North American Car of the Year juror, and a prolific freelancer.
Yes.
And I found a regular cinnamon donut on the rack today.
You did. I'm definitely eyeing the powdered cinnamon donut. And I will say the other one is blueberry. That would be my second choice. But I'm digging into the cinnamon.
The blueberry is a big deal because if you go to Dunkin' Donuts, they have a maple donut.
Oh.
And that basically fills the box aroma-wise.
Okay.
Like, it smells way better than it is.
Okay.
But the blueberry here smells fantastic. It's definitely the scent leader, if you will, but it also delicious.
Well, and so, like, the blueberry donut makes me think of when I was a kid, my dad, like, after church on Sundays, we would always go for, like, as a treat, we would go to Dunkin' Donuts and pick up donuts, and they used to have a cherry cake donut.
I remember that.
I loved the cherry cake donut.
I used to be an altar boy at St. Teresa Church. And St. Teresa Church, very close to Spunky Dunkers.
Oh?
Which was then Mr. Donut. And people might remember the Mr. Donut chain, but it failed here. Super popular in Japan. I don't know why.
Got it.
But my daughter has a Japanese Mr. Donut t-shirt. But the reason I mentioned being an altar boy was because sometimes you had to do funerals in the morning.
Okay.
The funerals were great because, one, you missed school to go work a mass. And second, often someone would take you to Mr. Donut afterwards to thank you for your time and service.
Well, there you go.
So you could basic blow off a half a day of school and get donuts.
And get donuts.
By being an altar boy.
There you go.
Totally recommend it.
That's all you need.
Yeah.
Donuts.
Good stuff. Rivian did something interesting.
Okay.
It's been doing something interesting, and I didn't know about it.
Okay.
And you tell me if you knew about it.
Okay.
Rivian had a sub-company, a division called ALSO, A-L-S-O, ALSO, caps, and it's a micro-mobility company.
Okay.
And they were working on e-bikes, scooters, and other small electric vehicles. I'd never heard this until they spun it off.
Okay, nope. I did not hear about this.
Well, they spun the company off. They have a minority stake. It's moved to California, but we will see more from them.
Okay.
So I didn't know that.
Well, it's a nice thing for them to also do.
Yes.
Dun-dun-dun.
All right.
You're not picking up on my...
No, it's fine.
Okay.
We're good. We're good.
Whatever.
I started grimacing because I have Tesla stuff.
Okay. Well, shoot.
But the big deal, the stock market ended up kind of even today. I didn't look. Actually, it just closed. But Tesla was down another 3% today. And here's some bad news. And it is actually bad news, and I don't in any way endorse this in any way, but a Tesla showroom in Rome was torched over the evening. Mm. 17 cars were burned. I guess the place is burned. It's going to have to be closed for a while. This is not a good way to deal with people's frustrations. But it also asks the question, can Tesla really make a comeback in Europe? I get the sense that whatever hate we're feeling here in the U.S., and by we, I mean the collective audience, it's stronger in Europe.
Yeah, I think you're correct by that. I mean, I have been listening to some news, and like I also see stuff from TikTok from European content creators and things like that. And there's no love for Americans at the moment.
No. Here's an interesting thing. I went to Europe a few years ago, and I met my cousins over there, and my parents took us to we were in Germany, and then we went to Serbia. But my cousins were interesting. They're a little bit younger than me, like a half a generation younger. And they're super anti-Apple. Like, not their gig. Like, they just, Apple's just too American for them and a little too pushy, and they don't want it. And they don't like Apple stores and stuff. But that's, their entire resistance is simply like, yeah, I don't like Apple. So you have to go from this to not liking this American product to setting fire to trucks. And it's a long trip.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I would love to say that we are better than that.
Yeah, I'd like to say that too.
I would like to think that, you know, we as humans and as Americans, you know, just because you don't like something doesn't mean you get to have a tantrum and create destruction.
No, and if you want to protest outside of store, if you want to try to talk people out of buying the cars, go to town.
Have at that.
Have at it.
That is your prerogative, but like doing physical damage, breaking laws, that's never the answer.
And then the double negatives are setting fire to a vehicle and all of a sudden you're burning a battery, which is terrible for the environment, or people who are vandalizing charging stations, which we need.
I know, we kind of need those. Stop that.
Yeah, so don't do that.
Yeah.
The good news for Tesla, if it's true, Elon Musk claims that he has 200,000 hand raisers for the redesigned Model Y in China. There doesn't seem to be any hand raisers here.
Well, and you know what I think is going to be interesting because of the potential impending probable tariffs?
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's going to be retaliatory tariffs in China. And so, you know, what does that mean? What does that look like for those 200 hand raisers? Are they hand raising before tariffs or after tariffs?
Well, and then they wouldn't be tariffs if there was some sort of tax on the vehicles built in China, sold in China. But that doesn't mean that they can't be taxed.
Right.
And the Chinese government isn't so rigid that they can't just decide to do something crazy.
Yeah.
All right. Enough of that.
Okay.
Enough of that. More news coming. And then we don't know what's going on with the tariffs until tomorrow anyway. Anything we say about the tariffs right now will be meaningless in a few hours.
Yeah. Essentially, yeah. By tomorrow at this time, everything will be 100% different, I'm sure.
All right. So we're going to talk about the Lexus NX that you're driving right now.
Mm-hmm.
I got two more stories to get to real quick. One, I looked into this. And DEF, diesel emissions fluid, yeah, you can't substitute pee for it.
I didn't think you could.
No, I thought maybe. Here's the problem. Human urine is mostly water. It's about 5% urea. DEF is 35% urea.
Got it.
So you're just not going to hit that number.
No, unless you have very concentrated pee.
Yeah, or you boil it down in your kitchen, which will probably really annoy your wife. So don't do that.
Don't. Yeah, please don't do that.
I actually wrote a story about this. While I was, I'm like, I've done too much research into a joke. I better get something out of this. So I will share this story. But DEF is interesting stuff. Basically, it adds about 3.5 cents per mile to the cost of operating a large over-the-road truck.
Okay.
That is not negligible, really.
No, especially because people who buy those trucks typically drive a lot.
They drive a lot, yeah. And 20 gallons of the stuff, if you buy it in bulk, it's about $10 a gallon, so it's not that cheap, will last about 6,000 miles. So if you fill your DEF tank, you can cross the country and come back, and then you have to refill it.
Right.
So there you go. That's just big trucks. I don't really know how long it lasts in like a Ford F-350 or something.
Okay.
All right, I have to swear. Are you ready?
I'm so ready.
Holy crap.
Okay, that's not really swearing.
The Kia K4?
Yeah.
What a nice vehicle.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
I 100% agree with you. It is a great vehicle.
My God. The K4 replaces the Forte in Kia's lineup. Mm-hmm. It's a small sedan, and it's been secretly selling pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
I think it sells better than people think it does, and I think it still does almost 100,000 units a year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a volume vehicle. But the redesign is interesting, perhaps controversial.
Okay.
The rear three-quarter view is it's kind of like a high bud and some serious creases and stuff, but it's a good-looking car, I would argue.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm driving the GT line without the turbo engine. There's basically a GT line and a GT line turbo.
Okay.
But the 2-liter engine, plenty, 147 horsepower.
Yeah.
It's enough.
Yeah.
Roomy, quick, quiet, really refined.
Mm-hmm.
I love the controls. There's really nothing about this car I don't like except for one thing, and I'm so tired of problems like this.
Okay.
Every time I turn off the car and get back into the car, it takes fully 3 minutes for the car to recognize my phone, and it turns off the audio system.
Interesting.
So I'm like, why isn't there any music? And I look, and the audio system is off, so I have to turn it on, and then I have to wait 3 minutes for the car and the phone to realize that they're friends.
So I haven't had this for a week-long test yet. I did go to the press preview. I think that was at the beginning of December. And I don't remember that problem, but again, like I didn't have it for an extended period of time. I switched vehicles. And, but no, I actually like the non-turbo engine better than the turbo.
It's probably less peaky, and it's probably better in stop-and-go traffic.
And less turbo lag.
Yeah.
And it just, I don't know, I just liked it better. And I think I was the outlier, but I liked it better.
In many cases, a larger non-turbo engine is your friend if you have a really stop-and-go commute.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're not listening to the engine spool out, though. But the 1.6 turbo that Hyundai Kia use... It's a pretty nice engine.
It is. That's good.
That's 190 horse.
Yep.
Versus, I think, 147. So we'll talk more about this car. Maybe after you drive it, we'll do a full review. But it's good.
It is.
All right. After the break, we talked to Derek Kravitz, deputy editor at Consumer Reports, about car data privacy.
Yes.
After the quiz, maybe we'll talk about an article you wrote a couple of years ago about cars stealing your information. Spying on you. That's what it was. Is your car spying on you?
Yeah.
I think that was the piece you wrote. And I will find that and share that this week because it's a good prelude to our conversation with Derek later. But you are driving right now a car that doesn't get talked about as much probably as it should.
Yes.
That's a Lexus NX.
Mm-hmm.
So that is Lexus's compact crossover. Primarily competes with the BMW X3, the Audi Q5, vehicles like that. And I recall it being a nice vehicle, but I throw the conversation to you.
Yeah, so the version I'm driving is the NX450. Do they call it the H Plus? It's the plug-in hybrid version.
Bunch of money.
It is a bunch of money, but you get about 40 miles of all-electric range, so similar to the RAV4 Prime.
Okay.
And it is... quiet. It is fast. It is everything I want it to be. I haven't really driven in the gas engine yet. I will hit it on my way home today, but most of my driving has been in the city. And I come home and I charge it up.
Are you wall outlet charging at home?
I am. I'm wall outlet charging. That sounds funny. Wall outlet. I'm like wallow?
Yeah.
Wall outlet charging. Yeah. Yes, at home. So just plugging into 110 volt jack. And, you know, so overnight it gets charged up and, you know, it's ready to go. And so living in electric only zone right now, you know, just back and forth to my gym, which is about a 5 mile trip. And it is one of those vehicles that I'm very impressed with because it is everything I want it to be. I honestly haven't found anything that is irksome on it yet. The wireless charger isn't great. It's not going to really charge. No wireless chargers are really great yet. It doesn't charge my phone. Like, it doesn't overheat it. It doesn't, you know,
charge it. And you need your phone because you're one of those Apple people.
I am one of those Apple people, but it has wireless Apple charging. It has wireless charging, wireless Apple CarPlay. So the connectivity part of it works really well. You know, it's got a big screen and the icons are very big on the screen. So it's funny because sometimes I'll do a review and you'll have a big screen and like little tiny Apple icons and people are like, well, Apple does that. And I'm like, no, Apple doesn't do that. The automaker gets to decide what it looks like on the screen. And so Lexus has done a really good job of integrating the Apple CarPlay into the screen.
So you haven't run into the gas engine yet.
No, I have not.
So you will on the drive home.
Yes.
You'll have to let us know how that is. There are vehicles in which that is terrible.
Yeah, like, what was it, the Dodge...
Dodge Hornet RT.
Yes.
I was just going to mention that vehicle, actually. Strangely, I was talking about that car today with Nick DiGilio. I did his podcast earlier today, but we were talking about the fact that they were throwing plug-in hybrids into the rental fleet. Bad idea.
Yeah. Don't do that.
Because even if someone resolves to charge, there's nowhere to charge if you were renting a car and on the road.
If you're staying at a hotel.
To do level 2 charging.
No.
So.
I mean, there are some hotels that do have it. So, the Courtyard Marriott that I usually stay at when I go visit my mom, that has a level 2 charger that's free.
Yes. And when we used to visit my daughter at school, there was a $100 a night hotel that had a couple chargers outside. I never had an electric vehicle for those trips, but those would have been good. But back to the NX.
Yes.
I'm not crazy about the styling, but I know people are. But when it's weird because Lexus is all, they're not all over the place, but they're very angular.
Yes.
Very aggressive styling.
Very big fish face grill.
Yeah. I think that they strike people differently based on the vehicle that they're on. Because I just wrote my review of the RZ, which is their electric compact car. I like the styling.
Okay.
And I like the black and copper crest color.
That is so nice.
So this, let's talk about prices on this, because the plug-in hybrid does get expensive. Mm-hmm. And one of the arguments is maybe don't go with that. Save the $10,000 and just get the hybrid version of the vehicle.
I mean, I think if you live in a place like Chicago and you have a garage, I think that a plug-in hybrid makes a lot of sense because you will very rarely touch the gasoline engine, like me, you know, in this week, have not touched the gasoline engine yet.
Which is the charm of a plug-in hybrid.
Yeah. But, you know, if you live in the suburbs and you're doing like driving more than 15 miles in one direction, it makes sense to maybe have just a hybrid. Or if you're doing a lot of highway driving, or if you're doing a lot of, you know, if you're lengthier drives, like a hybrid could make more sense, save the $10,000.
Yeah. And here's the money thing. So you can get an NX350H, so that's the conventional hybrid, no plug-in, luxury, and that starts at $52,665. Mm-hmm. Not a small amount of change, but it is a plug-in. It is a premium compact car, and that's about right there. It's $62,000, fully $10,000 more to get into the plug-in hybrid.
Yeah.
So you need to commit to plugging that in.
You do.
Or it's pointless.
This is not one of those vehicles that you buy and you're like, yeah, maybe I'll plug it in. No, you got it. You got to plug it in. And I don't know if California still does their, like, if you have a PHEV, you get free access to the HOV lane.
I think not anymore.
Okay.
I don't know. Hybrids don't qualify anymore. I don't know about plug-in hybrids.
Yeah, because I know once upon a time, a lot of people were buying plug-in hybrids in California just so they could
just
drive for
that.
Free. Yeah. I was talking with Ed Kim of Auto Pacific. We've had him on the show previously. And he was just like, yeah, we did studies and people are just not plugging in their hybrids. And I'm just like, that defeats the purpose. Plug it in, people.
The point about that is that then you're hauling around a heavy battery for no reason.
Yep.
And you paid for it.
Yeah.
So don't do that.
No.
One more thing about this car, the NX. The conventional hybrid does 0 to 60 in 7.6 questions, seconds. I think this is per car and driver.
Okay.
That's pretty quick. The plug-in hybrid does it in 5.6. You are picking up 2 seconds of 0 to 60 time by moving with the plug-in hybrid. So that's pretty good.
Yep.
And the horsepower difference is pretty profound. It's 304 horsepower, I think. 304 for the plug-in hybrid, 240 for the conventional hybrid. So you do get something for the money.
Yeah.
But I don't think you're going to get $10,000 back in resale value. So you should do it, and then you enjoy the free, the free gas, as it were.
Yeah. The interior is good. The screens are good. The seat comfort is really good. Driving position, good. So I there's a lot of pluses here. But if you are going to go with a plug-in hybrid, you got to plug it in.
Yeah. Real quick question. We got to take a break soon. But real quick question about the interior. Is it nice or really nice?
I would say it's nice.
Okay. The thing about Lexus interiors, they're always good quality. But they never seem that opulent. But they are screwed together so well.
Yeah.
Like the workmanship. This is like what German cars were like in the 80s. Like they're just so well put together. And then you slam the door on a Lexus or even a Toyota and it just sounds like a bank vault.
Yeah.
There's no rattle, no creak. It just wham. It just sounds solid and cool. And that's kind of a perk of Lexus ownership, I think.
Yeah, and I'm going to be doing a tech check of this vehicle today, and I'll have it posted tomorrow, so I'll send you the link tomorrow when I get it posted. But one of the things you have to look out for on this vehicle, and I can't remember if, I think the RX switched to this as well, but the NX was the first one that went to the digital latches with the doors. So it's essentially you just press a button to open it. Or, you know,
isn't a lever. Nothing
moves.
There's
no lever. I mean, there's...
So it actually does move in a little bit. There is some physical movement, but it is not...
It's a button.
Yeah.
It's not
How
a
do you
latch.
Feel about that?
You know what? It doesn't bother me. And it's funny because I had my husband in the car and I was just like watching him because usually he's my gauge of like how crazy tech is. And he didn't have a problem either.
Interestingly, years and years ago, I think when the NX was new, or maybe it was the first time it was refreshed, our guy Don Sikora, who is now the editor-in-chief of Collectible Automobile Magazine, but he went for Consumer Guide to the event to drive that vehicle, and came back, and all they talked about was that darn door.
Like, the door.
Like, who cares? Like, it just didn't seem like enough of a story. But they made a big deal out of it.
They did, because here's the thing that you can do with a digital latch. And I'm sure you could probably do it with a more conventional door handle as well. But if the vehicle senses like a bike coming up on you or another car, like the door won't open.
Right. I forgot about that.
And so that's what
Isn't
the digital latch allows you to do.
Isn't it more fun, though, if there's a bike coming up on you and you can open the door?
And you thwap them? Yeah. No, that is not fun. I feel guilty.
It's kind of fun.
Tom hates bikers. Give him a review on that.
So quick. That's not true. I used to be a cyclist. Your quick review, just a summary?
I think this is certainly a pricey vehicle, but it is well put together. It's attractive, and it is, I think, it's got some good cargo room, so it has the potential to be a nice family vehicle, but what it is really going to be good for is a commuter car in a city environment.
Plug it in, folks.
Plug it in.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we talk to Derek Kravitz. He is I lost his title, but he's with Consumer Reports. We'll be right back.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. This is the Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom. She's Jill. And it's that time of the show when I ask you to help me out.
Hey, Tom. Are you on social media?
Fancy that. Yes, I am. Yes, I am. You know what? This isn't going to make anyone want to follow me on social media, but I did spy two Mercury Sables over the weekend, and I posted them.
You know what? It must have been a Mercurial.
This is almost not worth
weekend.
Telling.
Yeah. I saw a Mercury Sable as well.
Did
with all-wheel drive.
Those cars were so... That was like the real second generation of the Taurus, with a third to come, and the Taurus and Sable. And the Sable, it just... Those cars went straight into fleet. I don't think...
Right. Well, and mine was actually the Mercury Montego, not the Sable.
Oh, well, that was the Ford Escape.
Yeah.
Montego. No, that was the big sedan.
Yes.
That was the big sedan, where the Taurus got big.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was not a good incentive for people to follow me on...
On
Twitter or Blue Sky. Yeah. But I am Car Guy Tom, and I do use the Car Spotter hashtag for things that are super cool, like if I spot a real old International Scout, or if I spot a pair of Mercury Sables.
Yeah.
I'm not selling it today.
No, you're really not selling it.
All right, we should move on.
Okay.
All right. Our guest today is Derek Kravitz. He is deputy editor for Consumer Reports. I'm having a terrible time today for Consumer
Tripping
Reports.
Over words.
And we're going to be talking about car security, car data security, which is something we'll talk about after the break, too, because you wrote an article about it.
Yes.
Derek, how are you, sir?
Great. How are you?
Apparently, I can't stop mumbling today, but other than that, I'm well.
Other than the fact that it's Monday.
Yep, fair enough. Yep.
But you guys recently issued an interesting press release, filled with data, by the way. That was a great press release, about car data privacy. And this is a big issue, primarily because we recently learned that General Motors had been selling data. But tell us a little bit about this and why you guys dug deeper into it.
Sure. Yeah, and as you noted, General Motors got dinged a bit for selling driver behavior data. And when I say driver behavior data, I'm referring to all the onboard data that most cars made after 2020 collect. So how hard you brake, how fast you accelerate, how quickly you turn a corner, among hundreds or even thousands of other metrics. And so they were selling this data without properly informing their customers that they were selling it to data exchanges, data brokers, car insurance companies, et cetera. We wanted to ask the question, how many other automakers, OEMs, are doing this? And so we contacted the 14 other big automakers in the U.S. By order of sales volume, just to check and see was this something that was unique to GM or all automakers. And we weren't surprised. Most automakers do use this data because it's, very valuable. You can sell driver data to a whole host of third-party companies and service providers and affiliates, and they use it for a whole host of reasons.
Now, there's a piece of bad news here, at least to me, as I've been following this story for years, and I was under the impression that when a manufacturer collected data based on the road use of a vehicle and the owner, that that data was autonomized and it couldn't be reattached to the owner himself. But that turned out not to be the case here, right? There were people who actually suffered by way of increased insurance premiums because of this.
Right. So it goes both ways, right? You sometimes do have anonymized data that does pull out, you know, redact and anonymize or hash all of your personal identifiers, name, address, home address, email address, you know, if a social is attached in some cases. But there also is, you know, unique personal or PII, personally identifiable information that's attached to a lot of driver behavior data when it's sold through like a big telematics exchange. Telematics, that's the term for the opt-in, you know, insurance programs that you can typically, you know, opt into in order to get a discount on your premiums through your existing carrier or a new one. But, you know, increasingly those data exchanges also traffic in new customers, in folks that are not opting into telematics exchanges. And they use that term telematics as sort of a catch-all. So a lot of people are lumped into that. And without them knowing about it, they are having their full name and info attached to their driver behavior data, and then that's sold to third parties in order to either, you know, monetize the data in some way or create new insurance quotes for you.
So I find it kind of hard to believe that you just called up like Ford or Stellantis and were like, hey, so do you sell consumers' data? And they were just like, yeah, we do that. So, I mean, like, what did that look like, and how did you gather like all of this data?
Yeah, that's a fair point. So, you know, one good thing about a lot of existing you know, consumer privacy laws in the United States is that 19 different states have required disclosures that companies have to make in order to operate in those states, right? In order to, you know, work with U.S. consumers and protect their data privacy. Because of those existing laws, California was the first one in 2020, and then, you know, 18 other states followed suit. We're able to see exactly what type of personal information is both collected and then what is sold, and then to whom. And one state in particular just put a new law on the books in July of 2024, Oregon, and they require that any company, if you're an Oregon resident, any company that you interact with, if you request to see not just the personal data that's collected about you and sold, but also if you want to see all of the third-party companies where that data is sold to or shared with. Sometimes it's not necessarily sold. Sometimes it's just shared as a service provider agreement, like SiriusXM or some other, you know, existing arrangement.
Okay.
They have to disclose all of those companies, right, to you. And so by virtue of that law, we were then able to obtain not just the data points, but then the companies that they were sharing with. And then so then you go back to the companies and say, well, what say you?
So, Derek, I've got a question for you, and I don't know if you can answer this. Why are manufacturers collecting this data? Like, why does General Motors care about how you drive their car? And is, in fact, are they collecting this data specifically for the purpose of resale?
No. So there are a lot of good reasons to collect this data, too,
okay,
right? So the flip side of this is, you know, for smart cities or infrastructure projects or just safety, you know, a lot of this data goes to NHTSA, or the University of Michigan has a big consortium where they ingest all of this data and then they, you know, share the driver safety information from it. A lot of companies, automakers, use it for very good reasons, for crash detection and roadside assistance and features and you know, built-in features within apps or onboard computer systems that improve response times and allow them to seamlessly connect, you know, crash information to dealerships and certified repair shops, et cetera. So there are good reasons for all this, and the more data you ingest and learn from, the better usually your products and offerings are. And of course, from the automaker's perspective, the more connected you are with your car digitally, right, through the app or through the computer system, the more brand loyalty that you have with that vehicle and with that brand, and you spend more. You spend more on parts, and you spend more on services and you know, recurring subscriptions and things through the car, and you stick with the brand longer. So there's multitude of good reasons, and then, you know, for-profit reasons for this. And then they also sell the data, right? So affiliates and service providers take this data, and it's very valuable. I've heard a lot of car execs refer to this as the new oil, which is probably an overstatement, but it is valuable, right, from a financial perspective.
We do hear numbers about what this data is worth in the billions of dollars. So real bottom line stuff here. So we don't want manufacturers to stop collecting this data. We simply want them to limit what they do with this data.
That's right. I think most consumers are comfortable with some data being shared as long as they know exactly what's being collected, who it's being shared with, and to what end, right? So as long as it doesn't adversely impact their insurance premiums, or it's used as part of, you know, some sort of third-party data broker where, you know, again, that data is leaked or hacked and results in, you know, important, say, credit card information being made available online for bad actors to purchase. As long as they know where it's going, I think a lot of consumers are actually pretty comfortable with that data being sold and shared. But in a lot of cases, the fine print is really dense. It's really technical. We went through all, you know, 15 automakers' privacy policies to really parse out, you know, the language they were using. And a lot of people don't understand the term service provider or affiliate. In a lot of cases, that's just a third-party company that's buying or sharing the data. So that's the disconnect.
Well, and I seem to recall from the General Motors situation that people were, like, when you buy a new car, there's all of these different screens, and you have to say, okay, but they're not reading the information. Like, who reads that information? It's like, you want my firstborn child? Okay, here you go. So, I mean, when somebody is buying a new car and they're potentially giving away their rights to this information or agreeing to share this with their information or with their insurance provider, like, what would you recommend to consumers? Like, what do they need to know? What should they look for, you know, as they're buying a new car and they're looking at the privacy of their data?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the same refrain that we hear from most car buyers. When you buy a car and you're going through, you know, either the in-person experience or, you know, filling out forms online, you know, ahead of a purchase, you know, you click through and you don't read through every bit of fine print that's put in front of you. So, you know, really, in terms of realistic things we can advise people to do, when you have a chance, even if you've bought a car and you've been driving it for months or years, take a look at the privacy policy. Look, when you can, at what data is being collected about you. Request your own report. You know, if you're in one of the 19 states that have good consumer protection laws related to data privacy, request your data report from your automaker and see what's being collected about you. Or go to the big data brokers that sort of packages all this information into shareable or sellable reports. LexisNexis is probably the biggest one in the United States.
Okay.
Anyone in the United States can go ahead and request their LexisNexis report, get it back, and just review it and take a close look. And if something doesn't jive or match with your expectation, or there's an error, a lot of errors in these in these reports, you know, you can correct it, you can opt out, you can have it deleted. So those are probably the best practices.
Actually, I was just going to ask you about that. We've got the right to limit the use and disclosure of sensitive data, the right to opt out, and the right to delete. To what extent do we have the right to opt out or delete data?
Most people have the right to opt out. In fact, all drivers and consumers do have an opt-out provision. Now, what's the trade-off there? Sometimes you won't be able to access certain, you know, features, you know, in-app or in-car that you had before, like roadside assistance or crash detection. So you might miss out on certain, you know, features that you like by opting out. But, you know, most people, actually every driver can to some degree opt out of data collection. There are some core basic data collection in patches or real time that are vital to the car operating and having software updates and just, you know, maintaining its normal operation. There are, again, in those 16 to 19 states, you know, where new laws are coming, you know, in play for data privacy, there you can officially or formally or legally opt out of data being collected and shared and sold. And, you know, that's in the last 5 years, those states have come online with those laws. So we expect a lot more states to join.
Have you guys looked into specifically semi-autonomous driving systems? It's my understanding that you cannot engage the use of Super Cruise, General Motors Super Cruise, or Ford's Blue Cruise without basically agreeing to share your data. And my understanding of what that is simply them collecting data about where you drive and the roads you're driving in. And basically you are, as a driver and user of these systems, actually supplying them with a certain amount of information as you use the vehicle.
You're exactly right. There are three areas that, admittedly, this investigation, we just looked at core sort of base driving experiences with modern vehicles, you know, 2020 and 2019, really, and later. Three areas that we really didn't look too closely at yet, but will obviously in the future, especially as, you know, usage increases, semi-autonomous vehicles or autonomous vehicles, fleets. So this is more sort of commercial drivers and gig economy drivers and those working for, you know, Uber and Lyft and others. But the tracking there is intense and very detailed and pretty extraordinary when you look at it closely. And rental car companies. You give up a lot of rights when you're renting a car, and a lot of that data is collected and attached to you in some way, shape, or form. So just those three areas are things to really keep your eyes out for.
Derek, we've run out of time, but we didn't ask you to tell us about Consumer Reports. Tell us about that and where people can learn more about your research.
Sure. Consumer Reports has been around for almost a century. It has great car coverage, especially car ratings and car testing and evaluation. We have the Auto Track Center in Connecticut. That's pretty cool to look at. So definitely, you know, check that out. We also have on my side the journalism part, so all the accountability and investigative reporting in sort of the really denser technical areas like this one.
All right, sounds cool. Derek, thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, that was Derek Kravitz, Deputy Editor at Consumer Reports. We're going to take a break, and when we come back,
Quiz time.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com.
I'm Robert Colangelo, host of The Green Sense Show. Every week, we feature groundbreaking innovations from energy and agriculture to smart cities and sustainable transportation. We interview experts working to create a cleaner, greener future. One of my favorite segments is Green Automotive News with auto expert Tom Appel. We test drive and review the latest EVs, hybrids, and ultra-efficient cars. Visit greensenseshow.com or listen to The Green Sense Minute on 105.9 WBBM Chicago.
This is
Talk Zone.
Yes.
Talk Zone.
Talk Zone.
TalkZone.com. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
Okay, I don't know what that was, but it was hilarious. All right.
I feel like it was you and me in a mashup doing something, right?
This is the Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom.
On Talk Zone.
On Talk Zone. That's so I hear.
Yeah. So we've said, apparently.
Jill, so you do the social media thing.
I do the social media thing.
Yeah, you're on, the Quattro Pro message board.
Okay. I am on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, Threads, Blue Sky. I'm on that Blue Sky thing. And, you know, I TikTok is my primary at this point. I post a new video every day. But still love to post the pictures to the gram.
TikTok is still around.
Maybe a couple more days. I don't know.
That controversy is not typically bubbling to the surface of weird things.
Not yet. But there is another deadline coming up.
Oh.
I want to say it's like in 2 or 3 days at this point where it's supposed to be really, really banned.
Oh, okay. Well, every car is going to be outlawed tomorrow. So
yeah, every car is going to be like $10,000 more expensive, you know, than it was tomorrow. But no, so I've started double posting a lot of my stuff on Instagram and YouTube. So follow me in all the places.
All the places.
All the places, because I do all the things at Jill Simonello, and I use the hashtag Car du Jour.
I'm just at 2.5 places.
You're in 2.5. What is the half?
Facebook.
Okay.
Facebook, because I hang online with Nick DiGilio, some of the fun TV stuff we do, I do that on Facebook.
Got it.
So, all right, it's quiz time.
Cool.
Are you ready?
I am not ready.
You're going to love today's topic.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Okay.
Find the fake color.
Nori green.
I'm going to give you a car and two colors.
Nori
and
green.
Not nori green. Do I have Lexus here? I don't. I do have Toyota.
Okay.
I'm just going to give you a car and two colors. One of the colors is fake. You need to identify it.
Okay.
All right. Are you ready?
Sure.
2025 Chevrolet Blazer. Mm-hmm. The last model year for the non-electric Blazer.
Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah. Two colors. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Oxnard Biscuit Mica or Iridescent Pearl Tricoat?
Making faces.
Yeah, I'm just I'm waiting for an answer.
So, I mean, Oxnard is such an absurd word that I feel like that has to be the fake. But in Twisted Tom logic, you probably picked the worst name and then made something that sounds really believable to pair to it.
That is a strategy.
That is a strategy.
It may not be the strategy I've employed today.
Ugh. I hate it when you do this.
Oxnard Biscuit Mica, Iridescent Pearl Tricoat.
I don't even know what Oxnard is.
It's a city in California.
Hmm.
I don't know much about Oxnard.
I'm gonna say Oxnard is fake.
It is.
Okay.
Good. You're on the board.
Ah.
You have one. I'm gonna write that down. One.
One.
All right.
You don't get to use your favorite phrase.
I don't. No, you have a point.
I have points.
If you get the first one, you're probably gonna get it. Because it's just six questions. The rules, five questions,
uh-huh.
Always automotive. And then mm-hmm. the sixth question, the bonus question, always related to the topic of the day.
Right.
So, second question, 2025 Ford Bronco Sport.
Okay.
Robin's Egg Blue,
mm-hmm.
Canary Yellow.
Huh. So I'm going to drive the 2025 Bronco
yeah.
Sport
yeah.
tomorrow.
One of the most popular vehicles that comes with a three-cylinder engine, and no one knows that.
But I haven't really looked at the colors yet.
Oh.
Robin's Egg Blue.
Robin's
Canary
Egg Blue.
Yellow.
Canary Yellow.
Both of those are very believable.
Yes, they are. And springy.
And very springy.
And bird-related.
They are bird-related.
Gonna need an answer.
If you had said Big Bird Yellow, I would have been like, that's totally the fake.
I didn't say that.
But you did not. I'm gonna say Robin's Egg Blue.
No, the Canary Yellow is the fake. Sorry,
okay.
I'm gonna put an X here. That means you didn't get a point. One of the most popular cars in the United States, the 2025 Jaguar I-Pace.
Jaguar.
The last Jaguar.
The last Jaguar.
And while I was on the website today, I saw that there's just the one trim level.
Okay.
But it has a really long name. It's like I-Pace R Dynamic.
I-Pace or F-Pace?
I-Pace.
I thought F-Pace was the last one.
No.
The electric one is the last one?
F is the tiny one.
No. E is the tiny one. I is the electric one. F is the mid-size one.
Then it's the E-Pace. All right. just sing a song here real quick. What did I do today? All right.
I see how you are. I'm tricking the trickster is what I'm doing.
You,
I think
you
this
are.
Is, I get a bonus point because you're looking stuff up. I get a bonus point.
Sure.
I get a gimme. A mulligan.
I don't even
know.
A
do-over.
Wait, now the I-Pace is the electric car?
Yes.
Okay. So it's E-Pace or F-Pace. So I've got E... All right.
Yeah, the E-Pace is the smaller SUV. The F-Pace is the bigger one. It had the SVR version, which was like the supercharged special version.
It's
I drove
F-Pace.
That in Greece.
F-Pace okay. is the last one.
Okay.
That's what we're talking about
okay.
here.
Okay, not the I-Pace.
No, 2025 okay. Jaguar F-Pace.
Not that any of this matters, but
no.
okay.
No, because there's no one listening who's going to buy one.
Well, there could be one person.
There could be.
And if you are going to buy one, you should email Tom. At
yeah.
carstuff at...
Yeah, and I will confuse the last Jaguars.
Right. What is it, right. carstuff at CG Auto?
It's carstuff at consumerguide.com.
Okay.
All right. Portofino Blue or Catalina Blue? Portofino, Catalina.
I think Catalina is the fake.
By the way, that's two California cities on this list.
Okay.
Catalina Blue is the fake. You have 2 points.
Woo!
All right.
I'm like, Portofino rings a bell for me.
This one's topical and new. Are you ready?
I feel like Portofino is also like a foreign city someplace, too.
It is.
Yeah.
Porto, is it? It's not off of Spain. Is it off of Italy?
Italy? Maybe Italy.
I think it might be one of the small Italian islands.
Okay.
We'll have to check during the break. 2025 Dodge Charger Daytona.
Okay.
Triple nickel or copper shock? Triple nickel, copper shock. And one is fake.
The Charger Daytona, this is the new electric version.
Car, yeah.
So you said triple nickel or?
Copper shock.
I think copper shock is fake.
It is. You've won.
Ooh. I was like, triple nickel sounds like it could be a gray.
They've used that one for a while.
Yeah.
And I think it's a very iridescent silvery color.
Okay.
It looks good. All right. The 2025 Toyota GR Supra.
Okay.
Absolute Zero, Algerian Matcha.
I think Algerian Matcha is the fake.
It is. All right, you've got four. You did nice.
I did well, except for the I-Pace, E-Pace, F. Or no, the.
Well, that was my bad. That was entirely my bad.
What was the one that I missed on the Canary Yellow?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I can't believe I can't remember the single Jaguar model that's still available.
F-Pace. We talked about it last week.
We did. At that point, I'd remembered it. Did I mention I got up early today?
You know, most people would not consider 7:30 early. Now, I would consider that early, but most people do not.
That to me is yesterday.
I you know, you are not completely wrong. My husband gets up at 6 a.m. every day, and I'm just like, how?
Here's a terrible time management thing.
Okay.
I have a line in the sand on Sunday.
Okay.
And I need to get everything I needed to do for the week done before Monday morning.
Okay.
And this means that I'm typically up till 3, even 3:30.
Because somebody procrastinated?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that is exactly
what.
It's entirely my fault.
Okay.
But I do stick to my guns, and I do finish everything I need to on Sunday night.
Which is why I often get text messages from you at like 3 a.m. on a Sunday.
Yeah, it's usually like, what car are we talking about?
Yeah, and I'm just like, sleeping, dude.
We don't have to answer then.
No, but you give me a hard time. You're like, you never answer, and I'm like, because I'm sleeping.
If I wrote you a paper mail, just a snail mail letter at 4 in the morning, you wouldn't get upset about that.
That's true, because I wouldn't get it for like 3 weeks.
But you didn't have to open it at 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
All right. Bonus question. Are you ready?
Okay. Yep.
Jill, I think you're going to agree with this next statement. We love taters.
I mean, we love them. We don't eat them.
Americans love taters.
Okay.
Potatoes. And they how many pounds of potatoes do you think the average American consumes in a year?
10,000 pounds.
That would be high.
I do think Americans eat a lot of potatoes.
Well, they do.
5,000 pounds.
120 pounds.
I don't know. I feel like people eat a lot of French fries.
No, you were ballpark. speaking of potatoes, McDonald's, 3.4 billion pounds globally a year. 3.4 billion pounds.
Okay.
That's like a tariff number.
So 120 pounds, that's just more than what I weigh. That's, like,
yeah.
I feel like I eat that in potatoes in like a couple months.
I could do that in a week.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty easily.
So 120 pounds seems low.
I wouldn't.
I'm just going to put that out
there. I wouldn't do that anymore in a week.
Okay.
A few years ago, I would have. All right. I need you to tell me which of the following is not a legitimate and real potato variety.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
The Smitch Butterscotch. Smitch. Okay. S-M-I-C-H. Smitch Butterscotch.
Okay.
The Huckleberry Gold.
Mm-hmm.
The Kerr's Pink. K-E-R-R apostrophe S Pink. Or Purple Peruvian.
Okay, I feel like Purple Peruvian is real.
Okay. I'll write that down. Real.
And you with your little Huckleberry thing, all I keep thinking of is, I'll be your Huckleberry.
Do you remember Huckleberry Hound?
Yes.
I think the cartoon characters of Hanna-Barbera would make a great bonus question.
Okay.
Huckleberry Hound was one.
Yes.
All right.
Okay, so read the first three again.
Smitch Butterscotch, Huckleberry Gold, and Kerr's Pink.
And spell Kerr's again?
K-E-R-R apostrophe S.
It could be somebody's last name.
Okay. Could be.
So I'm looking at the Huckleberry or the Smitch. I think
Kerr could also be the Latvian word for infection, which would make it inappropriate for a food variety.
Okay. That would be very inappropriate.
I don't think it is that, though.
Okay.
All right.
Unless it's one you made up, and you made it up because of the infection.
I have a funny makeup story that I will tell you after the quiz.
Okay. Right. So I think it's one of the first two. I'm going to go with Smitch.
As the fake?
Yeah.
Smitch is the fake.
Hmm.
You want to hear my funny story?
Yes.
As I mentioned, I'm tired.
Yes.
And when I'm tired, I don't type very well.
Okay.
I meant to actually do Smith Butterscotch. And I retyped Smith three times, and each time it came out Smitch.
And so Smitch it was.
And I said, dang it, I'm leaving Smitch.
Got it.
There
now,
you go.
Now, if it were Smith, I probably would have gone with Huckleberry. I'm just going to put that out there.
Yeah, but I was too lazy to fix it. I don't
Got
know.
It.
Something's wrong with my hands or my typewriter or me. All right, I just autographed this. This is for you.
Oh, yes. I'm going to go and hang it on my refrigerator.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting to have this conversation that we just touched on about car security.
Yep.
But it is a weird thing that we're rolling into this world of data sharing. And what's interesting about it is that people much younger than you don't care.
No, that's 100% correct.
It's a little weird.
It is very weird.
My daughter is very well-informed about certain things, and including this, and it's just not something she worries about. She sort of accepts it, and then and I guess is reasonably cautious about certain security issues, but she isn't spending a whole lot of time worrying about it.
No, and I mean, I feel like I'm at the age where I'm kind of in that transition between I don't care and I care a lot. Like I'm the example, like I'm on the cusp of both worlds, and I have given up a lot of my privacy because I am in social media and, you know, I do radio shows and podcasts and YouTube videos and, you know, people have seen my husband and, you know, like I give up a lot of privacy. But like there are some things that I'm not willing to give up. And it's really funny because one of the reasons why I'm so very against a Google operating system that doesn't have Apple CarPlay is because I've decided personally to share my information with Apple. I do not share my information with Google. So if I had a car that didn't know where I lived and couldn't navigate me to home, like that would just irk me.
I am. Interesting thing about Google is that, right, I operate a website.
Mm-hmm.
And there's Google AdSense and Google Console and all these other things that I need to get to. And I'm a little alarmed sometimes by how Google just always knows it's me.
Yeah.
Like there are no security barriers to me getting to this stuff because they know it's me.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is just a little weird. And it's really easy for me to share these sites with other people that I did determine that I need to share them with.
Yeah.
I've got a web developer working with me on some stuff. And it is a little alarming that that stuff is as easy to get to as not. Now, here's an interesting thing. We have Dish Network. We have a Dish Network remote that you're supposed to be able to talk to sometimes.
Yeah.
I've never done it.
My mother has that.
I've never done it. But I am alarmed that I'll be sitting there watching something on TV, and then the thing will light up. And I'm like, what did I just say?
Right.
That
is like, oh, you've got the catchphrase. You want to know what I find is even creepier than that? Like, I will... So I go to my mom's house pretty much every other weekend, which is down in Indianapolis. And maybe there's one weekend that I'm not going. You know, I've started training for a half marathon, so I've got to get my runs in. And so... or I'm going later or something like that. But I'll get in my car to, like, drive to the lakefront or drive to a pass someplace to get my run in. And, like, a message will pop up and it'll be like, are you driving to your mother's? I'm like, no, I'm not driving to my mother's. Or, you know, I meet my friends for breakfast at a place, you know, in the city. And I do that on Saturdays. And so, like, alternatively, it'll pop up. Oh, are you going to blank? And so I find that a little bit creepy. And sometimes on my iPhone, like at certain times, because I call my mom when I'm on my way here every week. And so it'll pop up and it'll be like, would you like to call Judy Simonello? And I'm like, why, yes, I would. But I'm like, that's creepy. But that's what I think of with all of this privacy information. And so, like, I feel like I don't want to share my information with everybody, but I have selectively chosen, like, the outfit that I'm going to share my information with. And for me, I live in the Apple ecosystem.
It's weird, too, when you just talk about something and then it just shows up in your email or something. Some
or
ad for
Facebook
a
ad for, like, On tennis shoes. I wear On running shoes. And so, like, I'll be talking with somebody about On running shoes and they'll come up to me tomorrow, like, the next day, and they'll be like, I've never heard of On running shoes, but you want to know what ad popped up in my Facebook feed today?
Yeah. My family and I, my daughter found a show on YouTube, and it's called Cooking History, I think, with Max Miller.
Okay.
It's awesome.
Okay.
It's an awesome show. This guy just picks some historical food item to cook on a show and then gives you the background of it. It's 20 minutes. He's really into history. He's fun to watch. He's crazy. It's a good show. But she uses her phone and her YouTube account, you know, to share with the TV. I never think about it. And last time I went to YouTube, my YouTube feed was filled with Max Miller stuff. And it's like, how did this happen?
Right?
Because
Google is creepy and I don't want to share my information with it. I put in the incorrect address for going home when I use Waze. That's how much I don't want to share my information with Google.
You know what I do when I don't want to enter my whole address and it has nothing to do with security, just being lazy? Mm. No matter where you are in the country, you can just put Woodfield Mall. And that's close enough for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, we have burned through a show. What do we have coming up next week?
I don't know.
All right. We have something coming up.
We do. I feel like I know we have. So we just talked with Alex from U.S. News.
We did.
I feel like I know we have Joel Fetter coming up, but I don't think that's next week.
Yeah. All right. Well,
yeah.
No big deal. We have a good show coming up next week. I don't know what car we're talking about yet either, but we will probably have significant news about the tariffs.
Maybe.
And maybe have an idea of how that's going to play out. I don't know.
Or we'll know nothing.
We may know nothing.
Right.
It is increasingly looking like, unfortunately, there isn't much manufacturers can do.
Car Gurus. That's who we're talking to next week.
Oh, excellent.
Sorry.
Okay. We've had them on before.
Matt Smith.
Yes.
All right.
What are we talking about?
now you're really stumping me. I feel like we're talking about car buying tips.
Excellent.
Yes.
We do say shopping tips in the opening monologue.
Yes. Well, now we're finally getting to it.
We should finally get to those.
5 years
it
later.
It only took 5 years.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks to Derek Kravitz of Consumer Reports. Thank you, Jill. Thanks to producer Randy and the good folks here at Talk Zone. Let's talk more about cars again.
Next week.
Remember to check us out at consumerguide.com.
The Car Stuff Podcast is produced by J-Turn Media.
To advertise on the show, please drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.